So usually we have a story here. For those of you that are new, we tell, you know, this whole thing started with a family sit at Seattle Insight. And this family sit, in, we would have kids come. And so we would have a story for kids to keep them kind of occupied and, you know, help their parents be able to bring them to the sit because it wasn't just for us. And so it was part of a way to help families sit with their kids. But now that we're online, kids are probably sick of sitting online because of all the classwork and everything. We don't really have them, but we kept the stories anyway. And I could not find a children's story, or I usually use my Zen story since we don't have a lot of kids. I could not find one for this topic of birth, aging and death. So you guys may have heard this. I'm going to read an autobiography in 5 short chapters. And I thought this would be a good thing to sort of share as part of our sit. I mean, it's part as a story that we're going to talk about. And I don't, I've heard this before, but not this way. And so this is by Portia Nelson. Chapter 1. I walk down the street. There is a big hole, a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault. I'm sorry. It isn't my responsibility. It takes me forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There is a big hole in the sidewalk. I see it there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. But it isn't my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There is a big hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. In chapter 5, I walk down a different street. And in a way, this is what I think dependent origination is. In a nutshell, we've talked about it over the course of a whole year, but this is what it is. And this is what I think the Buddha did. Ultimately, he went down a completely different street and he stopped trying to figure out a way to make the street that he was, that we all walk on, work. He just went a different way. So another way to think of this same thing, I thought of a different story, say it differently. This has to do when I was in undergrad. And I went to undergrad on a scholarship and financial aid. So when I went, wait a minute. I wonder if I have to, do I have to make someone co-host? Are you co-host, Suze?
I'm co-host. We're co-host.
Okay, perfect. So I went to college on financial aid. And so every semester, I had the exact same dichotomy. And some of you may have had the same dichotomy. In order for me to register and enroll in my classes, I had to pay my tuition. But in order for me to get the financial aid that would pay my tuition, I had to be enrolled. And I couldn't enroll. I couldn't register because I didn't have the money to pay up front. So every semester, for the 3 years I went to this university, every semester, twice a year, well, it was usually three times because I went in the summer also. So three times a year, so I would go in. Hold on, let me fix this. So three times a year, I would go in to register at my time to register, and the registrar would tell me, we cannot register you, we cannot enroll you without you paying your fees. Well, I would go through the whole process, I'd get to the end, but I couldn't actually enroll till I paid the fees. I say, well, I don't have the money to pay the fees because I'm waiting for you to get enrolled, so then I get it. They'd say, you can't do that. You have to pay the fees in order to enroll. What this has to do with birth, aging, and death is it took me until my very last semester to go and secure my bridge loan before I went to register. It took me 3 years to get that understanding. It seems so simple looking back on it now, but at the time, that mental understanding never happened. I kept thinking that they were going to fix this dichotomy, this difficulty. So many students had it. We'd be so mad every single semester. So when you got to the registrar and you didn't have the money, they would send you to a foundation that would give you a bridge loan, and then you would pay the tuition, and then you would get your money, and then you would give them back. They would take that money out of your tuition. But it struck me yesterday that it took me 3 years to go get the bridge loan before I went to register. And then when I went to register, I had already been approved for the bridge loan, paid my tuition, got my money. The whole thing was so simple. This is part of what the whole Dhamma points to, because I believed what they were doing, their system for the way they did their registration, was wrong. This is where the ignorance comes in. I thought it was wrong. I thought that they should have a better system. It wasn't fair to students. We all grumbled about it. We complained about it, whined about it. We thought it was wrong. So instead of us coming into the framework of reality, which is wisdom. Oh, this is the system I'm working with, so I got to figure this out. Instead, every semester I would operate out of ignorance, which is this system is wrong. So you're going to have to fix it. And every semester I would go in and argue with the people, and all these people would be in lines arguing. We're all arguing. And inevitably, I'd have to go to the foundation, get my bridge loan, come back. This is what we do with life. This is what I think the Buddha was pointing to. And the way he was pointing to it was to try to help us see this through the vision of this impermanence. In Pali, it's called anicca. So if we could see, I don't think he was talking about impermanence. I think he helped us see what we were doing through impermanence. And the way he helped us see it is this idea that we build permanency on impermanent conditions. So we build a sense of what is real, true, and permanent on an impermanent structure. I'll give you an example. With this election, since it's so perfect, Tuesday night, if you were for Biden, you were feeling a little shaky, a little problematic, upset. But maybe by Wednesday evening, you were feeling a little bit more steady. Like, okay, okay, I can see how this is going to work out. Okay, just be patient. Everything is okay. This process would be the becoming that comes right before this link we're in right now. Like, okay, okay, okay. Whew, I begin to believe everything's okay. And then come Saturday morning, the world news, everybody says, okay, Biden won. Okay, now it's structured. Now that's it. There's a sense of permanency here. It's a done deal. Even as we are feeling the permanency of a Biden presidency, it is impermanent. It's difficult to see that it's impermanent, but it is impermanent. It is already going to end before it even gets started. But what happens in our minds is we don't see the inevitable impermanence of it. And because we don't see that aging, that this presidency, whatever it is going to unfold as it unfolds, and you know, it will end by death, by losing a vote again, or by the fact that he's had two terms and there is no more. So it's going to end. But instead of feeling into the conditional nature of this, we live in a world where we think that becoming, that birth is permanency. That birth is a permanent thing. And so he put the birth, aging, and death together. Like, you can't see the birth without seeing the death. The reason why I think the way the Buddha did this was so important is because we don't have to look at, when we hear the word death, we think, oh, that's dying. But that's not really the way the Buddha was pointing to this. He was pointing to it more like every little detail of every little thing that you do is connected to this cyclical birth, aging, and death. This sit that we started at 10 is subject to birth, aging, and death. We're in the aging, and it is going to die at 11:30. That it is a constant reminder around us all the time. When we're willing to begin to see this birth, aging, and death as a constant apparatus in our life, constantly with us all the time, we have the possibility to think outside the box. We have the willingness to consider outside the box. If we don't see the birth, aging, and death process around us all the time, we have a mind that naturally assumes birth as permanency, birth as permanency, birth as permanency. And then when the aging and death process happens, the aging and ending happens, it always catches the mind off guard. So we're in a practice that's designed to help us see this inevitable aging ending process. I read the book In Love with Life, Mingmyo Rinpoche. Oh my God, the best book ever. I love it. Many people did not like that book because he is up close and personal about dukkha, his dukkha. I mean, the first aspect of that book is he was born a monk. So he's been treated on this pedestal his whole life. And what made this book so enticing is that Mingma Rinpoche decided they do 3 year long retreat. So you're in retreat for 3 years. And he decided he wanted to do his in the world. But in order for him to do it in the world alone, he had to sneak out because no one would let him be unprotected as a toku, born a monk, a realized being when he was born. So there's no way he could be by himself and no way he could be in a situation where any harm could come to him. So he had to sneak out. And he describes the whole sneaking out, getting out. And his arrogance of assuming he doesn't know what it's like to be around regular people. So he decides he could take it. I mean, he's like this great monk. Of course he can, be, he could do whatever. He's a great monk. He describes being on a train with a boatload of people with rage and anger because people are touching him and because he can't handle the smell. And he thinks everybody is lice infected and everybody is like, he's trying to find his practice in the midst of a world that he had no idea he was stepping into. It's a great book on the truth of a great teacher practicing with difficulty so that we can all see that when our minds are freaking out, yes, that is a part of practice and that's what we're practicing with. But the part that I wanted to point to before I end here is at the end, he comes close to dying and he described the Tibetan understanding of the bardos in a way that I truly respect this ability to learn, this ability to see the importance of practicing with birth, aging, and death. So the bardos under the Tibetan system, I don't know much about it, so I'm just going to give you my little, non-Tibetan understanding from Mingmer's book. The first bardo is the bardo of dying. It's the opposite, right? We do birth, aging, death. They do death, aging, birth. So the bardo of dying is the ending of something. And there is a difficulty when things end. There is a degree of respect that we owe the ending of something. Not just, it's like the 5 or 6 stages of grief that we go through when someone close to us dies. There's a way in which if you respect those stages, then you understand what's going on with you and you don't have to get mad as you progress through denial and then, the pain of it, the grief of it, the depression, the acceptance and all of that, right? You're just going to process through a system that's natural and normal. And that understanding is what the bardo of dying is about. Understanding that when things end, there is a process that we have to process through. And when we're willing to accept that this is going to end, we can move to the next bardo, which is dhammata. And the dhammata is this bardo where we don't know what's going to happen, we're trying our best to control the situation, to make something happen the way we want it to happen. We've let go of this old, but we're trying to grab a hold of something in the new, and we don't know how to get it. And so there's all this confusion and mess that's part of learning how to be still in the midst of change without the need to push it and make it go one way or the other. This is aging. And then inevitably through that aging, there will be a birth. And the difficulty of the birth is the bardo of becoming, is that you see the birth before it actually gets here. So the grasping, wanting mind and the trying to make it be the way you want it to be comes before us. And we begin to get caught in trying to force the becoming into a certain way. When you practice in your everyday life, and he went through all these different scenarios talking about how he practiced with these bardos in our everyday life. Just like in Portia's story about the walking down the street, or me realizing it took me 3 years to understand how to work through a system that I didn't like. But it could be just how you get up in the morning, right? You notice you get up in the morning every day with the same energy and you hate it. But then the next day you get up with the same energy and you hate it. And the next day you get up with the same energy and you hate it. And you keep doing this, but never do we look back and say, what is it I'm doing here? What's happening here? It's beginning to see that there is a birth, aging, and death happening just in the small window of your getting up in the morning. There is this process that's happening that's difficult to see because all we see is the birth. We don't see the aging. We don't see the death. So we never see the period of time in which that morning energy subsides, changes, shifts, and it does shift and end and change, but we don't see that. We don't see what we do in the morning, our thinking in the morning that turns that energy on and brings us into it. I think the ultimate goal for all of this is that one day we are all going to die. We are all going to come face to face with our own demise, and we are not going to want to let go of it. So in order to be with that death as easily as possible, we got to get personal with death as a natural part of life, as an inevitable part of the way that we live. And there's no better way to get used to death than this beginning to see the relationship between beginning, middle, and end. I like the beginning. I actually like the way the Tibetans look at it as ending, changing, beginning. Ending, changing, beginning. Ending, changing, beginning, rather than birthing, aging, and death. But what it's the same thing, because once that death happens, there's a changing and there's a rebirth that's going to happen. So, but if you begin to look at your life at the endings of things, when something is ending, what happens? What's the change that begins to happen? And what's the relationship between that ending and something else beginning? That's what we're looking for. This whole month, we're looking to see if we can see into that. So why don't we look in here? Why don't we take some time to talk about this in groups? All right, so we're just going to talk about how this process, this aging, Can you see it as part of an ongoing thing that's happening in your life constantly? That it's not something random at all. It's a pretty ongoing thing. So, what do you think?
Wow. I love you're telling us about starting with death and then the aging and birth. And it's like, I feel a little bit like my brain just kind of exploded, because when we do that, there's like, I don't know, it's almost as if there's something between ending and change and aging, that there's space, that there's, if we really, when we really give death the respect that you were saying it deserves, then there's just space, opportunities, and it's not about me doing anything. It's about seeing that there is that. Yeah. And I just feel like my mind is blown because I'm so attached to the beginnings of thoughts and
that's right,
ideas and this and that and the other thing and my to-do list and all of that. And mm-hmm. It's almost like wanting to start with going to sleep at the end of the
day. That's right.
And then working backwards or, you know, I don't know. I just feel turned upside down and I love it.
Yes,
can you tell us the first name of the Rinpoche who wrote the In Love with Life?
Mingmer, In Love with the World.
Oh, In Love with the World. Okay, thank you.
Mingmer, Mingmur.
Thank you. Oh,
yes, it is because birth, we get triggered in it and we don't see the death part anymore. We just get in the birth. And that's why semester after semester after semester, I would go in with the same argument. and you know, what I realized, what was funny, the whole registrar team cracked up, because on that very last semester, when I went and got my loan first, I still grumbled about what I didn't like about the system, right? It's not like getting a loan prevented me from grumbling, but yet it's the mind's, what happens when we, it creates permanency. But if you stay in the death first, then you can begin to see impermanency. That's great.
And Tiwari, that also, that switch that you made from birth, aging, death to death, aging, birth, and then lovely, the sort of the reframing that as ending, changing, beginning.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Has been just as it did with you, Suze. You say it just blocked, it blew the top of your head off. It kind of blew the top of my head off too, because I'm working right now with a lot of end of life issues.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, I have a lot of decisions to make and a lot of people are involved in that. And it's, you know, there's consequences and whatnot. It's involved.
Yeah.
And I have been thinking, I've been focusing on the death aspect of that because, of course, I will die. And actually, I'm not concerned about that. That's not an issue for me. But making all the arrangements around that have been very death-oriented.
Right.
And there has been tension coming up as I find all that decision-making process can become involved and complicated and, you know, the people that want this or that or whatnot. But when I think about it as death or as ending, changing, birth, that changes all these end of life choices into beginning of something new choices.
That's right.
And it releases me from the tension of having to get it all figured out and done, you know, get it, decisions made and get everybody agreed and on the same page. And which has an ending kind of feel to it. But when I think of it as the beginning of, I'll be gone, but all these other new things are going to arise as a consequence.
And
that
the reason
completely changes my whole world of tension and perspective about it. So thank you very much for that.
That's right. Well, you know, Lefty, because in your words, I don't know if everybody can hear this, you've already passed the bardo of dying because you've already accepted the end of life aspect of it. The death has already passed. What you're in is this changing and birthing process. That's why if you keep staying back there with the death, you've already made peace with that. It's the rest of it that has to, it's the rest of it trying to figure out how to make the birth a certain way.
It's the stuff.
Yeah, it's the stuff of it. Yeah. That is, this is, when I flipped it, same thing with me. It was mind blowing. I just thought, so whenever I get tension, I just ask myself, so where am I on the spectrum? Am I trying to battle with the ending of something? Am I trying to get some surety around the changing nature of it? Or am I trying to somehow or another project into the becoming what I want? You know, that's how I begin to see. I'm trying to work my way through this stuff and not get so caught in the tension itself. Just understanding the process of where I'm at. That's good. Yeah. Kate?
Thank you very much. This is mind-blowing also for me. And right now, a close family member has died. And so the birth or the death, change, and rebirth, it really hit home as this metaphor because he died last week. He's Catholic, so have an open casket at their house now, and then we'll be going to a funeral and eventually get cremated, and then the family's going to come home without him and be basically sort of rebirthing around life without him.
Yes.
And so right now, and at first I was hung up when you said bardo, I was thinking, well, don't you die and then there's rebirth? Where's the aging? Doesn't the aging then come after? But now it makes sense that you die. And now we're in the transition state. You know, I'm seeing him embalmed and the family is in transition to, okay, we're getting ready to send him off. And then there will be coming back. All right. So rebirth of next chapter.
That's right.
I don't know if I'm seeing that, but it's,
yeah. And every one of these stages has their own dilemmas, right? The endings have their dilemmas. And the transition stages have their dilemmas, their processes, their, you know, difficulties in and of itself. If you know there's going to be a change, that difficulty is different than when you don't know what's going to be the next thing. And that's different than letting go and finally accepting the end of something. All of those are all very different. But when you know where you're at, you can kind of understand, oh, that's why I'm having this difficulty here. Because I'm not, you know, I want some surety. But this is the bardo of Dhammata. And so there is no surety in the bardo of Dhammata. It's all flux and changing.
And I also noticed how my clinging or aversion differs in sort of being in the death state or being in the changing state or being in the birth, because maybe I really like the birth state, or I really if it's something bad, I really like that death state, because then it's
that's right. That's right.
And recognizing that and saying, well, step back, it's going to be ending anyway and starting anew.
That's right. Yeah, that's it.
And just to add to that,
okay, Michelle, I see you after Nana. Go ahead, Nana.
Oh, sorry if I interrupted there.
No, you didn't interrupt.
You know, for me today, my reflection on what you shared is largely microscopic, not as macro as Kate shared, really micro to the day-to-day activities. And my reflection was actually an incident that potential incident that happened about less than 2 hours ago. Potential miscommunication which could have escalated, and so I saw it begin. I disengaged, and 15 minutes later, I was over. Okay. Meanwhile, I did nothing but just observe myself in that process, using that model you just described. So I'm beginning to think about how this every opportunity is an opportunity to think about things from that model.
That's right. And Michelle, I'm going to get you just 1 second. The reason why this is important, and it comes at the end of the whole cycle, is that our inability to see this is what prompts ignorance and starts it all over again. And we just keep doing the same thing because we don't see this natural, that there's no permanency here. So we don't see that there's no permanency. We only see the birth, and then we don't see the ending, and we do the same things over and over and over, over and over and over, over and over and over, never seeing that really, that's the center of our ignorance. Yeah, Michelle.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
This is my first visit here with you. Really beautiful. Thank you. So I loved what you said, and I'll paraphrase it, and maybe it isn't what you said, but what I heard is like, you know, even just seeing and thinking about this process is it's essential to be able to see where I'm at. And looking at in this moment where I'm at, it might be different later on this afternoon, or it is different from yesterday, but where I'm at this moment right now, going through this process with you in a way that's shaking it up for me, this old brain, this old lady thinking the same way so many times, you're shaking me up and having me think backwards and being able to recognize that, wow, you know, I can apply this to, like was said just before, you know, to on a, in the big picture or in a small situation, or, you know, in a situation that I'm in right now, that I've accepted that there is ending to something, and that in that ending, I'm recognizing that there is some space. I guess it's the space to age or learn or experience or be open. And I'm open to it. And I have been, but I haven't recognized it as that's what this is. And being yes. able to see it. Thank you for saying it that way, or at least simply enough for me. And you know, understanding that I can say it, I can intellectualize, yes, I know it's impermanent, blah, 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 and I'm attached to certain things and da, da, da. But actually to go with it is, I'm grateful for this, for right yeah. now, for this moment. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, the impermanence itself, this is why it's so difficult for us to see it, is because we can intellectually know it, but we can't experience it because we don't experience endings. By the time an ending comes, we've already turned towards the next thing to quickly grab a hold of something, because we live in a mind that needs permanency. And permanency means no ending. Everything is steady. So we're quickly grabbing onto something else. But if you start from ending and say, okay, every time, you know, there's always going to be some process around the endings of things. There's always going to be a transition, which is the aging, and there's always going to be a birth, a starting of something new. This is the world we live in. That way, we can begin to see the endings of it. A way that Ajahn Chah, this great Thai teacher, taught people was he had this really nice cup that he loved, this famous cup, and he showed everybody, this is my cup, I like it. There's no problem with liking it. There's no problem with the fact that this is your favorite cup. This is part of just the joy of being in the human realm. So he likes it. It's his favorite cup. It's my cup. But what he did was he saw his cup as broken, that he saw it as somebody was going to chip it, break it. It wasn't going to be special and new. And because he saw it that way, one, he could cherish it every day that it was still with him. And two, it wasn't going to shock him when the cup fell over and some, you know, attendant knocked it over and dropped his cup and broke his cup. It was already broken. But we tend to see things as our favorite thing as permanent. And then when something happens that it falls over, we get disappointed because we never expected it to end. But it was always going to end because there's no such thing as things being permanent like that. So that's the, this is the point of ignorance and wisdom. Ignorance doesn't see that ending, and wisdom sees the ending inherent within all things.
Quarry, I want to run something by you.
Sure.
So part of what I'm getting from that is that birth and death are actually the same thing. So as long as I am in my sort of egoic state, when I die, that's an end of everything. But in fact, it's a beginning, it's a birth of all sorts of new things beyond my death. So the death and the birth are intimately commingled. And it's only by being in sort of this relativistic egoic state that I think of death as my death as being the end of everything. But when I connect my sense of self with everything, there can be no death, because after my body dies, there'll be a birth of all this other stuff that will happen as a consequence of that.
Yes.
Do you think my thinking is anywhere on track with this notion of birth and death being the same thing?
Yes, I do. That's what I think the Buddha was pointing to on the deathless. I think he was we are the ones that have time. So we're the ones that see endings and beginnings as different time frames. But from the Buddhist perspective, there's no time. So death, the ending, the beginning, and the transition is all happening at the same time. You can see it all at the same time. And that inherent in the ending is the dhammata of change and the bardo of rebirthing. It's all inherent in things that are conditional, because all conditions come together and fall apart and come together and fall apart and come together and fall apart. The way, I think it's the perennials. Are those the ones that come back every year? So yeah. It's the same way, right? They come back and they're alive and it's like, oh, I got the flowers. And then they're gone. There's like, oh, there's no flowers, but the flowers are still there. They're just, the conditions are not right for them to be up, and then they're down, and then they're up, and then they're down. And then all the leaves and everything dies, withers away. You think they're gone? They're not gone. It's like trees. They're not gone. They just bring new leaves. And so there's this deathless quality to this if we don't put it in time and matter, and we understand that it's all interconnected together. So I think that's what you're pointing to, Leslie. It is all connected. Your death is not the total end of all things, because there is a continuation. It just looks different than it did when you were there. But it still continues. The wisdom, the understanding, the consciousness, all of that.
Thank you, Tuari.
You're welcome.
Tuari, I have a question.
Sure.
Is this, could you also say what you're saying is, in physics, energy can neither be created nor destroyed?
Yes, it's like that. If we see ourselves as a solid being, I'm Tuari, this is who I am, and this is what I do, then that inevitably is going to end. But if I see myself as understanding, consciousness, awakeness, then that never ends, because that consciousness, understanding, awakeness is always there. So it's learning to live out of the aspect that's not conditioned rather than the part of me that's conditioned. And the part of me that's conditioned is, I look like this. This is what my body is. This is where I live. This is my house. This is my stuff. And all of that stuff is subject to ending, change, and rebirth. Great. This was a great Dhamma session, wasn't it? This was good. Mm-hmm. Who knew? If you know what it is, I believe it's because we're in such a great space because Biden won. We can talk freely about death. Imagine what this conversation would have been like if the election had went the other way. Then how would we be talking and what would this look like and the heaviness of death? You know, all of this is, this is what I think the Buddha was pointing to about it being conditional. It's conditional based on where we are at the time.
Also, there's that embodiment part because Minger, I'm reading that book too, and he really, there's a reframing that you've offered us, but we have to go through stages of emotional, you know, the sensations and the body is involved, and yes, some of these things are really hard to be present with.
That's, well, yes, when you're in a difficult situation, but the right embodiment and the understanding that this is all part of this bardo is what helps you go through.
Yes, definitely.
Yes,
definitely.
Rather than like when Mama died, understanding the stages of grief was part right and parcel of how I realized, oh, I know where I'm at. It's not, I'm not freaking out. There's no, yes, anger is a part of it. Yeah, I understand. Depression's part of it. All of this is pretty much okay. It's just the normal process.
Yeah, I was going to ask what those stages were because I thought, yeah, I need to know those, but I can look them up on the
internet. Yeah.
And also just to remind you that Donna, offering of Donna is always appreciated. You can do it on the Sims website. And many thanks for the Donna that already and your generosity you've already shown. So, for the last few minutes, we can just quietly sit together for a moment as we close. And I have a poem to offer that will be in the spirit of metta and healing that we all need so much at this time. A poem by Mihuddin Ibn al-Arabi. There was a time I would reject those who were not of my faith. But now my heart has grown capable of taking on all forms. It is a pasture for gazelles, an abbey for monks, a table for the Torah, Kaaba for the pilgrim. My religion is love. Whichever the route love's caravan shall take, that shall be the path of my faith.